Thank you. Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Committee will come to order. First, we're going to hear from the PCA. Oh, I see Senator Senjamin is there. We'll take you next, Senator Senjamin, if you'd like. We can take you as the first bill. But let's do our PCA discussion. Mr. Schierkenbach. Ms. Hallbeck. Welcome back.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. And first, Madam Chair, I think I'll have Myrna Hallbeck, our Chief Financial Officer, go through. We've provided responses to the many questions that were raised, very important to us. Thought I'd have her go through and maybe have a little special highlight on a few of those. But then we can see if there's any additional follow-up questions from what we've provided.
Okay. And you're also going to talk about the change items?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Ms. Hallbeck.
Madam Chair, members, many of the...
Identify yourself, please.
Yes, sorry. I'm Myrna Hallbeck, Chief Financial Officer of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And the first thing I would like to highlight is the document labeled Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resource Budget, our answers to questions. Yesterday, we got a... pared down number of questions, and we will for sure answer those. But this was our summary of questions we thought we heard when we were here at the budget meeting. So we have provided,
Wrong one. Okay, thank you.
In great detail, information relative to the greenhouse gas questions that were asked. I have provided on the back, there's a long about the cost of permitting, and I'll go back to that one in a little brief. This is our responses to questions we heard that we didn't think we had answered sufficiently when we were here the last time.
Okay.
With that, yesterday you had asked that we provide a copy of the recent report on the progress of recycling, and you should have a colored document like this in front of you, the report on 2007 score requirements issued in 2009. And I have given you the front half of that, not all the appendices. But in our letter, you have the connection to the web page so that if you want to see the detailed appendices, you could find that. On page 1 and page... It summarizes the recycling that has been done in Minnesota, and we're at about a 42% recycling rate of MSW. And then once you look at composting and waste reduction efforts, that credits up to about 49%. If you look on page 7 of that report, you'll find a long-term graph and to see how we had... from the 90s moved up very significantly, and now we have plateaued. And as you know, last year in the policy report, we were looking at what things can we do to move recycling further. And that study with stakeholders is still going on. So our goal is to move this further on down the path.
What's the timeline for that stakeholder group?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, right now the timeline is to be done and have a report by the end of June of this year. And so, and that, again, that is being facilitated by MEI. There was a concern that maybe make sure it was a independent facilitator so that all voices were heard. So we have a very good group of about 16, 17 people coming from the industry, from local government, from citizens groups, and others.
Okay. Thank you. Is that all you wanted to?
I just wanted to a little bit more just to make sure that you knew what we had provided you because you had also asked for a copy of the Clean Water Partnership projects, and we did provide a list of that. And we are. Madam Chair, the And so that provided the entire list. There are some projects in 2009 that are still in the work plan and development phase, so there'll be more money spent yet in this fiscal year and allocated by contract, but they did not know the amount of those dollars. So these are actually contracted dollars.
Okay, and can I just for a reminder, how much is the proposed cut to this in 10-11? Do you know that off the top of your head?
It's roughly 1.7, I think.
Was it? And how much of the budget was that?
$3 million.
Well, it was a good chunk of the budget. That's all right.
Yes,
we don't
it
have
is.
To. We can go back.
There's about 800,000, I think, left.
And so these programs that are listed, did everyone find this is a separate sheet? There's a lot of information here in front of you. So this list of programs, these are all programs that, for the most part, start and complete within a two-year period? Or some of them go longer than that?
Madam Chair, members, the diagnostic part of these, which is typically what the CWP part pays for, is about a two-year program. Then they can move into the continuation for implementation of what they find as solutions, and typically we use then the federal 319 money for those. So the project starts with diagnostic, takes about 2 years. They can go another 2 to 3 years on 319 continuation fund. And so that would have loans to help septic owners fix problems. It might have loans for feedlots, and it also might have some grant work that's done in there.
Some what? What
was grant that? Work that
okay.
they would do as well.
Okay. And how do you pick the ones, the programs, each year or each biennium?
Madam Chair, members, these projects are picked. There's actually a rule process with this, and so we put out an RFP in the fall of each year. Watersheds, counties, the University of Minnesota, they apply for the projects. It goes through a very detailed ranking process, and then we go down the rank order of them as much money as we have available to move out to them.
What kind of criteria do you use?
It's used on completeness, readiness, what issues they're doing. In some years, we've had priority focuses. So 1 year the focus was on areas that were looking at feedlot impacts to a lake or a stream, and so projects like that got some extra points to it. So it varies from year to year. There's actually a council of member agencies that work in the water area that help generate those priorities each year.
Okay, and so for the 10-11 biennium, are those priorities put together yet? Do you do it in advance of the biennium?
Madam Chair, we do not do it. They do it over the summer just before the RFP is issued in August and September.
Okay. So we don't know which programs would be applying or would be eligible.
That's correct,
ma'am. In the
next
biennium. Okay. Great. Any other questions? Are there any other documents then?
I think you have all my documents, Madam Chair, except for the – I gave you a list of the landfills because you had asked about – those are the just the MSW landfills. I did not copy off the 106 construction and demo debris, but just gave you the MSW ones.
Okay. All right, members, and just by way of introduction, our staff compiled a list of all the questions that we had asked over the last couple of months of hearings for the agencies and ask them for responses. So this hopefully completes that. I'd ask each of you to take a little time and go through this at your leisure, and hopefully that'll answer any questions that the committee had. Okay, thank you.
Good. Madam Chair, we move on to the change item,
yes,
which involves the idea of EQB transfer to the PCA. And what I thought I would talk from, we put together this one-page sheet that's just a diagram, and I thought I could first start with that and explain kind of the process that is being proposed in the governor's budget and the recommendation. And again, this idea was there's been questions raised in the last few years as far as the role of EQB, how it's been operating, the focus of issues, and looking back at the broader initial thought of what EQB would be about, setting an overall environmental agenda for the state, helping to coordinate activities between agencies and those type of things. As a result of a subcommittee work of the EQB to look at refocusing EQB, the governor's office looked at those and finally decided to come up with this proposal. And the idea is somewhat to reinvigorate EQB, and the idea is kind of the focus on the issue of transparency, of accessibility, of focus, and those type of things. And the idea, as you'll see, is one is right now there are really four EQB staff, and they are now located in the Department of Administration in a group that deals with information technology issues. The idea would be to have first, by July 1, 2009, if this passed, have those four staff move to the agency. I should say that you'll see the change item is really just $250,000 moving over. $150,000 of that would be a reduction that the Department of Administration is taking as part of their budget proposal in order to deal with their cuts in general fund. And so we would get four staff, we'd get 2.5 FTEs, and the idea would be we would look. Some of those, three of the four actually are at the point where they could retire if they wanted to, but our idea is to hold them harmless if they come across, and if they want to continue to work, we would find other positions. We've held vacancies, so we'd try to find spots that would take advantage of their expertise and experience. The idea is, again, how they're divided up, just so you can understand. Right now, two of the folks basically focus on kind of the broader water planning and planning issues. So when they've done things as far as water sustainability, water supply, water priority reports, two of them have been involved in that activity and coordinating with other agencies. There's two other staff that are really there to deal with the environmental review function. And for the most part, a lot of the environmental assessments are really done by local government. They're the RGU, a term you've probably heard, Responsible Government Unit. And those two basically spend a lot of their time helping local government, which doesn't do too many of these. So often when they're doing them, they haven't had much experience in the past, helping them by providing assistance and guidance as they go through the process. Also, they are available to help state agencies. So there are state agencies such as the PCA that also do a lot of environmental assessments and have done EISs. We do it relative to air facilities, wastewater treatment facilities, solid waste facilities, feedlots, and those type of things. So two of those staff would come over and deal with that. We think there's efficiencies. We have environmental review staff at the agency, so they would, the two dealing with environmental review would kind of be folded in with them, and then even some of our people on the that are focused on environmental review now would even help provide that local government assistance on dealing with it. The other two that would come over that are dealing with water planning, environmental planning, environmental policy setting, would really be in move to other areas of our agency where we're dealing with all these follow-ups to the impaired waters program, to protection programs and other things that are part of the planning function anyway. So they would be incorporated in with those people as well. So the first one is the movement of staff over. The second part is really the part that is looking forward to the third element. And the idea here is over time, first to have EQB come over and be under the agency as far as now the agency would be helping to administer the activities of the Environmental Quality Board. Again, that board has 15 members, 5 citizens members, and 10 come from agencies. And the idea would be between now and end of June next year, we would help administer for that Environmental Quality Board. But at the same time, there would be the generation of this report. And the idea is we'd generate a report that would be sent to the legislature next January 15th that would look at several different issues. One of the issues would be how, with this movement and this change, would we continue PCA is now responsible for the Environmental Quality Board functions, how would we make sure that we would be coordinating amongst other agencies? The second thing is there's a concern of if it comes over to us, how could we be both setting environmental policy and then providing regulation? Yes. And we would provide some response on how that would happen and how we could make sure that it would happen in an independent way. I should just say when that concern is raised, I think it's important to understand that right now the PCA is the agency that does the rules for permitting, does the rules for all kinds of other things, and yet we're the same agency that then regulates through those rules. So we're already doing that type of thing. And I think it's important to remember, under the state law, administrative law, Chapter 14, we have a very expansive process if you're setting rules, where you have to come up and you have to deal with development of a statement of need and reasonableness, and then you have to go through use of an independent hearing examiner. So I think that independence issue is something that is addressed quite adequately through Chapter 14 and the way the administrative law function works in this state. The other thing, another thing the report would look at is how would we deal with kind of accessibility to the public. A key thing with EQB was the idea of how accessible is it to the public. And again, I think that really goes to something that our agency is very good at. We are one of the few agencies in state government that has a citizens board. So we have a very active citizens board that meets monthly and is involved in several different issues. And I hope all of you at different times have heard about different activities that our citizens board has been involved in. The other thing would be, how would we have discussions on emerging environmental issues? And again, I think this goes to a central thing. We'd have to report on how we'd make sure that would continue to happen. But again, right now, PCA is the state agency that is really responsible for administering all the federal environmental laws. If you look at the whole framework of environmental laws that exist in this country, Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, the Superfund law, the Petroleum Remediation Law, the hazardous waste laws under the Resource Conservation Recovery Act, the PCA is the one that's delegated to deal with all those across the state. So I think keeping track of emerging issues just goes to the center of what we need to be doing each and every day under our existing mission and our existing responsibilities. And finally, another thing we'd look at is the implications of replacing EQB board by the PCA. So what does it mean if you're moving from a 15-member environmental quality board, 10 people coming from the agencies, 5 citizens, now to the PCA? And our citizens board has 9 members. The chair is the commissioner of the PCA, but the other 8 members of that board are citizens coming from various parts of the state and various representing various sectors of the state on dealing with it. So that would be the process. The idea is, and it's been somewhat controversial, of actually setting a date, July 1, 2010, at which time EQB would be abolished, and then those responsibilities and roles of that board would be taken over by our citizens board. And again, that would be something we'd want to study and report to the legislature on by January 15, 2010. And I think it's important to look at that center path there. It shows that EQB would continue to exist during that time of putting together the report. So they would be involved as well in helping them put that report together and making sure that the adequate or appropriate issues were being addressed. In fact, I was at the EQB meeting last week, and we were laying out this process and starting to get feedback from them on what they thought of this whole idea and also how they would be involved if this were to pass, how they would be involved in discussions on putting this report together.
Okay, Deputy Commissioner, is there a bill that lays all this out? Is that in your budget bill?
It's in our budget bill, Madam
All
Chair.
Of this process that you're
well,
talking about?
Well, some of the process things, actually, I think there's a separate bill now. Senator Betzel has a bill that includes the language that actually deals with some of the mechanics of how this would happen.
Okay, we'll need to bring that into our committee to look at it. So you're talking about eliminating the role of the Citizens Board would substitute for the EQB board?
Madam Chair, so, that's the idea.
I mean the PCA board would substitute.
Yes, the PCA Citizens Board would substitute for the Environmental Quality Board.
So there would be no involvement of those 9 commissioners. There wouldn't be any other state agencies at the table in any of these discussions.
Madam Chair, what it would be is that's where the report. We would come forward with some ideas on how we would make sure that coordination happens. Although I should say that right now, each and every week there's things going on where we have all kinds of activities with the different agencies that are involved in that. And so, again, even myself in the last 2 months probably have had meetings with Commerce, Department of Ag folks, DNR folks, Board of Water and Soil Resource, Health Department, and MnDOT. And so, again, on a variety of issues, we are dealing with those already. But the report that we would have to submit by January 15th would have to explain how we could make sure that that would happen. We understand that we have to look at it regardless of who's there as commissioner, deputy commissioner at the PCA. We'd have to look at some structure that ensures that that communication and coordination happens.
Okay. I'm having a hard time seeing how, why, you know, what would be left of the EQB after this. And I guess you're saying there'd be a discussion about that over the next year.
Yes, and Madam Chair, good. Right now, if you look at the law of EQB and what's set up, I mean, part of this would be actually looking at a lot of what exists in statute that is outdated and hasn't really been acted on for a long period of time. And what we probably come back is things either to finally abolish or delete those or freshen those up in some way, as if there's something where there was a seed of an idea that should be looked at. One of the things that was envisioned for the Environmental Quality Board that hasn't really happened is this idea of an environment, periodic environmental congresses, to actually get together, have some periodic thing happening every once, 2 years, 3 years, to really look at setting an environmental agenda for the state, discussing where what progress has been made on different issues, and then looking ahead and setting some priorities for what are the issues we need to be addressing in the future. That's something that hasn't happened under that. And I would also like to say, and I have to be careful on this, if you look, there haven't really been, when we had the meeting in March just to talk about this idea, the last meeting before then had been last December, and before then, I don't know how many months it had been since the previous meeting. And again, for a lot of these meetings, the idea, I think, theoretically is there to have these agencies involved. I think the reality is, for a large part, a lot of the commissioners don't show up in the meeting simply because there aren't issues that really deserve their attention. So I think it's a great model, but if you look at the reality of how it's worked, I think those agencies have their whole host of issues and priorities they have to deal with, and a lot of them don't normally go over and involve environmental issues.
Well, and I don't think there's been enough staffing to really lead as the EQB was intended to do originally. What's the $150 reduction? You said four staff. Would this reduce that?
To two and a half staff, two and a half FTEs. That's the $250,000 that's there, so it would roughly be a savings of $150,000 a year is the reduction that is being taken on by the Department of Administration as far as their cuts and reductions.
Okay. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Deputy Commissioner. Thank you for putting this together. I'm a visual person, and so this is very helpful. As somebody who's relatively new to this, can you give me just briefly, I mean, just what was the purpose of the EQB and how long has it been around?
EQB has been around since the late 70s, I think it was. And the original role, and this is interesting, I mean, and also what's changed. You had the Environmental Policy Act at the federal level, and then you had the National Environmental Policy process of environmental review occur at the national level. Many states back at that point in time, late 70s, then came up with their own mini NEPA. And in here, it's called the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act, and setting up an environmental quality board to look at the broader environmental issues and make sure that when there were projects that were done that could have potential for environmental impact, there was an environmental study done. And I think, actually, originally, I did just had discussions with Chuck Dayton not that long ago, one of the people that kind of helped put together initial legislation. At first, there was the model that is under the federal idea of the CEQ. I don't know if you've heard of Council of Environmental Quality. And actually, at the federal level, the idea is you have a very small group, and the original idea in the state, I think, was for three people, kind of very technical, scientific, to help provide this expertise overview of environmental issues that should be looked at. I think what ended up, in my understanding, as a compromise, first, they wanted to have more than just three and some citizen involvement, and then there was concern if they were just citizens and these experts, what would be, who would be there voicing the opinion of the state agencies that would be impacted, and so then as a compromise, you ended up with this 10 state agencies, and I think that's where you kind of ended up today. I think what's changed, and we're finding for the PCA's involvement in environmental review is, for a long time, I think environmental review, having this broad overview was important because even as we're dealing with the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, Superfund, other things, we often were just starting to get our hands around what were the real environmental impacts of different activities. I think over time, and what's actually created a conflict is, and a concern that there haven't been enough environmental impact statements is, we're now addressing a lot of those issues, if not a majority of those issues, through the permits, as we should. So actually the environmental regulation through air permits, water permits, solid waste permits has expanded. So often what has to be made after you do an environmental assessment, is there a potential for significant environmental impact that still remains? And so often the reason there isn't is because the permits, over time, we have learned to address those issues in the permit. And so that's where I think now you get this issue of, so what additional is the environmental review done? And right now the majority of the environmental review in the state occurs at the state, at the local level, because of things such as retail, commercial, other operations. And then the local government is the responsible government unit to do the environmental assessment.
Senator Rummel.
Madam Chair, Deputy Commissioner, thank you. You said in your opening remarks that the refocusing of the EQB would be to improve transparency and accessibility. And you're going to do that by reducing your staff, and then eventually they get assimilated into the PCA and governed by a citizens board. And I'm afraid that we're losing this overview and independent expertise that was part of the original idea. Or do I not understand this?
Senator Rummel, you should stop questioning yourself, because you're asking very good questions.
Yes. and again, Madam Chair and Senator Rummel, I think part of this is, and I don't think anybody could argue with what the Chair said. I mean, there's been changes before. This was the EQB was part of the Estate Planning Agency and strategic planning. And so there was a whole broader group of people dealing with broader planning. And over time, as that was, for various reasons, was shrunk down or eliminated, then smaller, the EQB ended up being with a smaller and smaller group. And most recently, about 3 or 4 years ago, even the part that dealt with power plant siting and power lines and that was moved over to PUC, Department of Commerce and PUC indeed, and that. So that was split off. So now you end up with 4 staff located in the Department of Administration. And again, part of this for refocusing and transparency is right now there almost nobody knows even where they really are. And the idea is our agency is in the center of dealing with all the different environmental issues in the state. This brings them over. So one, honestly, I think it's important just for the staff to have them around other people that are really doing environmental work. You always have that balance. Are they then independent? I think it's actually more important that they're reinvigorated and connected with the expertise we already have. Again, I think with a citizens board, that helps provide the independence for us, because on any controversial issues, there's an opportunity for people from the outside to speak to our citizens board and raise any questions they want. So they, and again, those, that input isn't stifled by a bureaucracy, so to say.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I have some serious concerns. This is the third time in the past week I've heard about the need for planning and overview and oversight, that over the years, this is before I got here, I guess, that piece by piece we've been eliminating those institutional capacities to think long-term, big-term as a whole, the integration, the synthesis of the policy and the decisions we're making. And so it disturbs me that it just seems like piece by piece we're undoing the things that help us do a good job. And this is just another example that I'm seeing for, you know, I did read the EQB's report from last year or whenever it came out, and so was concerned when I heard this was going to happen. And now I'm more concerned, frankly. You said in your earlier testimony that 2 of the people worked on water planning and coordination, and 2 of them worked on environmental review, and now they will be working with other folks in environmental review. I don't see anything
that gets us back to that overview, that synthesis, that integration of the work that we do.
Senator Roma, we'll probably have a little more. We'll see if there's any public testimony on this issue at some point before we move forward and make a decision on this.
Madam Chair, and Senator, if I could just comment. You've raised good points. I think one thing is right now we are in a point where the size of government and the question is, because of the budgetary constraints that we have, of how do we take even what we have and make it work better. I mean, and I was at the hearing yesterday with Senator Olson's bill on this idea of taking a look at how the environmental issues are coordinated. And I remember Senator Chaudhry talking about the proliferation of different groups. Actually, this is moving in the different direction and say, let's just take the groups we already have and just refocus and make sure that those are really dealing with those issues. And again, I would say, and I'd hope it makes some sense from what you've heard over the last couple of years, is that Citizens Board is a very visible board. It deals with issues that are, you know, very relevant and right in the center of some of the environmental issues that the state has to deal with. The impact of feedlots, the impact of mining, the impact of global warming, the impact of energy, ethanol plants, all those things are things that we deal with day to day. So the idea is actually getting them over, making the best use of the staff and the things that this agency, our agency, already does, rather than having it spread off someplace else.
All right, thank you. We need to move on.
Thank you very much.
Any other, anything else you wanted to present today?
Thank you. We want to be responsive so that meets your needs. That's the important thing.
Thank you. We appreciate that, and we'll be sure to look at the information and let you know if we have additional questions. And I think at this time I'm not going to ask for testimony today unless there's anyone here who's came just to testify about the EQB. We didn't really put that on the agenda, so I don't see anybody. We'll have an opportunity to comment on that in the future for the public. Thank you very much. Senator Senjum, are you ready to go? Since you're not on the committee, we will take you first. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for allowing us to come forward. Thank you for hearing this bill. This bill, Madam Chair and members, is brought to me and now to you by the Solid Waste Administrators Association. I see that you're getting the handout that we wanted you to have, I believe. Okay. And it has to do with the disposition of the solid waste management tax. For those of you that are not aware, there is such a tax. Collected $67 million in 2008. 30% of those of that tax goes to the general fund. 70% goes to the environmental fund, and out of that 70%, a portion of that goes to the state's recycling efforts. This bill makes a slight modification in that 70%, that 30%. Portion for recycling and allows then on into the future for that fund to grow as the fund itself grows and to accommodate recycling in a proportional basis on into the future. So, Madam Chair and members, I have Mr. Mark Gamm with me. Mark is a solid waste administrator in Homestead County, part of Dodge County. I'm sorry, Mark. I wouldn't be claiming Homestead County. Dodge County and in the Casson Manorville area, and so Mark is with us today, and Mark's more expert in this, so I think I'm going to refer you to him, and Mark then to the committee, and he can explain the bill a little further.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Gamm.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. We're real happy that you were able to hear us today. Thank you, Senator Senjum, for bringing us forward. As Senator Senjum said, I'm Mark Gamm. I work for Dodge County, but I'm the elected president this year of our association, which represents the counties of Minnesota from all the way from the, you know, throughout the whole state. And also with me is our president-elect, Randy Kaiser, with Hennepin County. So if you have questions more related to the metro area, Randy could probably answer those. But what I thought we'd do, Madam Chair, is just to walk through the flyer that you have in your hands.
Pardon me? You're asking if we have the...
Yeah, I would just like to, if it's proper, I would just walk through the information
please.
On this flyer.
Yes. Go ahead.
The first thing we wanted to do was make sure to recognize that the bill does not take away any money from current allocations. So it's going to not amount to any tax revenue moving away from the general fund or the environmental fund. What it does, as Senator Senjum said, is allow the counties to be a part of the growth of the solid waste management tax. So what is the tax? Well, in 1989, the SCORE legislation, which maybe you're aware of, kickstarted recycling in the state. As part of that kickstart, the tax was applied and later modified to the solid waste management tax, which now is a 17% tax on your garbage bill if you're a commercial customer and 9.75% if you're a residential customer. The state collects that money, and in 2008 it generated about $67 million. So where is it going? I think we mentioned earlier that 70% of that money by legislation goes to the environmental fund, and 30% stays in the general fund. So in 2008, $47 million went to the environmental fund. And from that environmental fund, $14 million was transferred or allocated to the counties for their SCORE programs. So the question is, what is a SCORE program? And many of you are familiar with the services counties provide that are the core services. They're the recycling, the curbside recycling, the drop-box recycling. St. Louis County has 30 drop-off sites for recycling. And many parts of the state have drop-off access to good recycling, also recycling of appliances, tires, and compost facilities. Those are the core services that the counties are providing, and we've been doing that for 20 years. So what's the problem? The problem is that in 1990, the counties got $14 million to run these programs, and in 2008, we're getting $14 million to run the programs. So what has happened with the cost of service, and if you flip over your page, you'll see that that first chart, the bar chart, illustrates funding sources for our programs. And the blue line is the money from the counties, and the red, I think that's red, is money from the state. And you can see, as I illustrated earlier, that the funding is the same and has been for 20 years. Okay, the next is the question of the opportunity, and what this legislation provides is the opportunity. And as you'll see, that the solid waste management tax is growing annually. However, our SCORE funding is stable or has been dropped in the past. So what we're simply asking with this legislation and supported by Senator Senjum is that we, through this formula, get a part of the growth of the solid waste management tax. The last chart just reveals kind of the assumptions of how the breakout would be if the bill was passed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gamm. Have you worked with the Association of Minnesota Counties or others on this proposal?
Thank you for the question, Madam Chair. Yes, in fact, Emily Garlitz is here with AMC. AMC does support this and has been in front of their solid waste advisory.
Okay. Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Senjum or Mr. Gamm. Who would be giving these grants to the counties? And I guess, my question is the same as was addressed to the deputy commissioner before. What do we do with the counties that are at the minimum amount? They're asking for the same thing that other counties are asking for, and how can we accommodate this allocation so that every county gets a little bit of a bump?
Madam Chair, Senator Kubley, the current SCORE funding is prorated based on your population. So we're assuming that would stay in place. So as the revenues increase, the same distribution pattern or formula would apply. So, for instance, a small county, the least amount of money a county can get was $55,000 this year. Now, obviously, that it wouldn't be the same for Hennepin County. So there is a formula, and that formula has been in place for 20 years. Is that the question? I'm sorry. Maybe I didn't answer that.
Well, Madam Chair and Mr. Gamm, that is the question, I guess. You know, but those small counties also have increases in costs. I mean, like a lot of things, there are costs that change that are constant. I mean, the pieces that are there are constant, but we all know, for instance, that the price of fuel goes up. And so you have some changes in the cost of what's done at the county level without a corresponding increase. So I guess what I'm asking is, you know, for a raise in the amount that goes to counties that have the minimum population.
Mr. Gamm.
Madam Chair, Senator Kubley, I understand your question now, and that would we could address that as part of the SCORE grant distribution formula or some other mechanism, but we didn't deal with that question.
Okay.
And Senator Kubley, we can talk about that as the governor's also proposed an increase in the grants, but
yeah.
Based on the current formula, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know that, Madam Chair, but, you know, there are quite a few counties in the state that still don't change even under that old formula.
Sure.
Just because their population base has gotten so low. So I don't know. I mean, it leaves quite a little geographic area to be covered that doesn't get any kind of an increase while their fixed service costs continue to go up.
Yeah, and I think we probably all heard that from all of our counties because it has
been a lot
of pressure. I know I have.
But, Madam Chair, you know, the
really
counties with
the
larger population will get an increase, mm-hmm. where the others will not.
Right.
So I guess, you know, I mean, it wouldn't have to be a lot. You know, if we could get a little bit for them, that'd be helpful.
Okay. Mr. Gamm, what about recycling rates? You know, that's what we need to really focus on. What are the outcomes that we're hoping to achieve from these programs? And Deputy Commissioner Schierkenbach talked about the study on recycling that's trying to identify why we've plateaued. And I don't know, maybe maybe this is a softball and your answer is we don't have enough money and that's why rates aren't going up. But maybe you could give me a more nuanced answer than that. I mean, how could we use our funding to help encourage more recycling? That's what I'd like to ask, I guess.
Madam Chair, I was going to say that we don't have enough money, but now I'm. I think what the bill does is set the base level. And what we're worried about and what we're seeing now at county levels is the drawing back of services. In Dodge County, we're not going to provide household hazardous waste collection services any longer. So what we're really fighting for is some base level maintenance funding to continue the programs that we're currently operating. To take us from 40% to 45% to 50%, I'll be honest with you, it's going to take more money. This bill will not deal with that. What this does is keep things at this rate. And what we've been fighting with, of course, for 20 years, we got the same level of funding. So we've been making up that difference with county resources. And we're at a point now where the counties are just saying, well, no, we can't do that any longer. So I really think if we're going to get our rate up to 40, 50, 60%, we're going to have some structurally different things happen.
Okay. I appreciate that. And I really agree with you that I don't think we've done a fair job of funding these programs around the state. But I also think we should consider putting, at some point, maybe once – you know, we need to determine what base level of funding is really appropriate and whether we need to do better to get to that base level. But beyond that, perhaps we should tie funding to stretch goals and ask counties to show that they can achieve higher rates of recycling and that they could sort of earn more funding or somehow tie those results to the funding. I would really love to see us do that at some point, if that would be helpful to help achieve those higher rates of recycling. So just something to think about.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess one of the reasons I'm raising that issue is that I think, you know, if the small population counties see that other counties are getting this increase, and they've already been making a good faith effort to try and increase their amount of recycling, that discouragement will set in, and they'll say, well, what's the use? You know, they don't think we're big enough to pay any attention to.
Sure.
And I think they do a good job. I mean, you know, they're, you know, I mean, couple of small counties that I'm aware of are already higher than the 42% statewide average. So, you know, I think they are working at it and trying to do what they can.
I appreciate that, Senator Kubley. That's good to have that perspective at the table. All right. Are there any further questions of Senator Senjum or Mr. Gann? All right. Well, would someone on the committee like to move to approve this bill and lay it on the table for possible inclusion? Okay, I think I saw Senator Kubley first. Senator Kubley moves that Senate File 1621 be recommended for possible inclusion in our omnibus funding bill and laid on the table. Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, and I'm not encouraging this, but just so it doesn't get hung up, would this need to go to taxes?
I don't believe so. That's what I was looking at, the terminology here. It's really, let's ask Mr. Mueller, our fiscal analyst.
Madam Chair and Senator Senjum, I think that your bill amends the tax law is one way of tackling this issue. Another way we could do it is this. Mm. Is through the appropriation process of saying that, you know, 30% of the – it would be more of a statutory appropriation instead of amending the tax law. It would probably be a better way to actually accomplish the same goal you're trying to get at here. So if we would work on – if we would pursue this, we probably would want to tweak the language a little bit or maybe even do it in a different chapter. So – but – I think
Madam,
we would
Madam Chair,
be able to do it.
Perfectly fine not going to tax committee.
Okay. All right. Good. Just wanted to make sure of that.
We could miss that committee.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, these funds would go into the, as I understand, they'd go into the environmental fund if we didn't do what you're asking for. So it is within, squarely within our budget. So that's why we'll keep it here and see if what we can do to help.
Good.
All right. On Senator Kubley's motion, is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right. Senator Saxhog.
The fact that their bill would be, I think they wanted a statutory.
Six.
This really isn't a statutory corporation. It kind of looks like.
Right.
Come on. All right, Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Today, I'm presenting House File 805, which deals with a couple of important forestry issues. I think we all realize that the wood products industry is no different from a lot of the other industries in the state of Minnesota, and it's been hit hard by an economic downturn. And the goal here by Senator Bach and myself, the two authors on this bill, is to help the forest products industry. Between the two of us, we have 19,000 square miles of, and a lot of that includes forests. So the first thing we propose is to increase the amount of wood that the DNR puts up for sale using not increasing the actual amount it puts up for sale, but the way that it's prepared for sale, and by using the sold as appraised value system rather than the scaling system. This can be a more efficient way to sell wood, and would particularly, I think, when we're talking about biomass potential in timber sales, would be particularly good. The second part of this bill deals with a pilot project that will allow the DNR to lease land for forest management purposes. This will help in the issue of consolidation by allowing other parties to manage state land. We've had discussions in the past about the checkerboard pattern of forest ownership in the state of Minnesota. This was an example would be if a piece of state land was embedded in some private land up in northern Minnesota owned by a timber company, and who would more efficiently be able to manage that land, possibly. Again, this is a pilot project, and it would help the DNR by allowing them to lease lands that they would be easier managed by other parties. With me today is Bob Tomlinson from the DNR Forestry to answer questions that we may have.
Great. Thank you, Senator Saxog. Mr. Tomlinson, do you want to add anything?
Madam Chair, thank you. Bob Tomlinson with the DNR. Again, this is probably the third time I think this would be before a few of you anyway on the committee here, so I don't probably need to add an awful lot. It is an important bill. The idea that originally came out about a 6 or 8 weeks ago in this committee, Senator Saxog, to kind of fine tune it as it's going along. We think it's in pretty good shape, and we're anxious to kind of work through it. So I'll leave it at that unless there's some questions.
Well,
I've heard about it before. So.
Yeah, we have, and if any members have questions, now would be the time. But let me just ask I'm trying to figure out where this fits into our budget for forestry and the personnel changes that we're looking at, thank you, and whether we need to keep this in our committee and put it in the context of that budget or not. And so, Mr. Tomlinson, obviously the DNR wants to do this. They want to make these internal personnel changes, correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct. I mean, the original idea, this idea has been floated around back and forth for probably a few years. The urgency, I think, about it maybe comes more to the front now because of the downturn in the timber-based economy and the reduction in the forest management investment account. And Senator Saxog and Senator Bach, and I think the rest of you probably agree, we just need to be looking at different ways of doing business in the DNR Division of Forestry. And so we feel that these two the pilot in one case and the study in another may provide some longer-term help in that regards. I don't see this as being something that's going to necessarily influence the number of FTEs that we have working in different places and things on other projects. There's only minimal impacts relative to the time that it'll take to do it the way the bill is laid out here now.
But Madam Chair, I think directly your question, Mr. Mueller, I think, has the lack of funds that we will need. Maybe he can explain the fiscal note.
Sure. Good idea, Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair and Senator Saxog, I did request a fiscal note on this bill, and DNR just completed it. And the net effect of the fiscal note is no additional dollars. But I want to note in the fiscal note on page 2, under expenditures and revenue formula, if you look at point number 2 there, they did say an additional $500,000 would be needed or $50,000 would be needed for this project, and it would come as a reduction in some other efforts. And the same with section 2 of the bill, which is explained in page 3 of the fiscal note. Again, under the heading expenditure and revenue formula, the DNR says it will cost $100,000 to implement Section 2 of the bill, but they say they would be able to do it with the reduction of other efforts. So the question here is, I guess, is this something that the DNR wants to do, and what other reduction in other efforts would they do to accomplish what's in this bill?
That is a good question for the DNR.
Mr. Tomlinson.
Madam Chair, members, I think, first off, it is something that the DNR would like to do. I think we need to kind of move forward. The second part of your question is what won't we be doing as a result of this? I'm not prepared to say exactly right now, but I can tell you that as you're well aware, there's a whole suite of things that are important work that we're currently doing that one could suggest might be peripheral to the core workloads of fire management and timber management and those sorts of things like that. And we might start by looking at opportunities within those places for those reductions that we'd have to take in order to get at this. But at this point in time, we haven't sat down and said, well, what aren't we going to do relative to the – we could certainly do that if you'd like us to and get back to you, but I haven't had the chance to talk with the management team about what that would be.
Oh, yeah. And Madam Chair, back to the efficiencies of forestry and the DNR, we're talking about consolidation of our management of our lands, which one of these deals with, and the other one is how we can more efficiently use the wood that we do put up. And so both of these I consider to be efficiency measures, and I realize efficiencies and reform during a time when we don't have as much money are sometimes problematic, but I still think these things should take a priority in terms of the forestry and DNR.
Okay. Mr. Tomlinson, we understand there's some federal stimulus money coming in to help with some of the forestry, the firefighting work.
Madam Chair, members, we submitted, I think, somewhere in the order of about 19 proposals through what is the National Association of State Foresters, who then passed those, vetted those proposals and with all the others from the states, and sent on four of ours to the U.S. Forest Service for consideration of funding. Right now, that's where it's at. It's in Washington, D.C. One of those proposals dealt with the FireWise Community Program, which is basically a program that the U.S. Forest Service funds and helps us with, where we go into communities around the state and help them by eliminating or reducing, if you will, fire hazardous materials within close proximity to structures. Actually, before that, it's helping develop the plans for that, things like that. And I believe that the proposal that you're referring to dealt with that and deals with the opportunity to do more communities than we've currently been working with in the state. But it wouldn't have anything to do with the actual suppression of wildfires. It's more of a fire prevention approach to things.
Oh, yeah, what are the others?
Madam Chair, I can think of two of the other three off the top. One of them was an effort for, I think we requested $2 million plus, where we could put potentially, I'll call them underemployed loggers to work, doing timber stand improvement work in order to help increase the health and productivity of timber stands that are younger ages, where it's pre-commercial thinning, basically. And the other one that I recall is relates to the Urban and Community Forestry Program and looking for dollars for, I believe, for helping with the invasives management work within communities in the state. And I apologize, I can't recall what the fourth one is right off the top. I wasn't prepared.
Well, maybe next time you come back,
sure,
and just give us that,
sure,
information. That would be helpful. All right. Any other questions on the bill? Senator Saxhog, what do you want to do with the bill?
Well, Madam Chair, we can either move it and send it on to full finance, or if you have, if you would rather it be laid on the table for inclusion, whichever works better for you. I'd just as soon move it on to finance.
I guess I don't have strong feelings. I don't want to. It doesn't have a. On the one hand, it's a little bit of a precedent. I don't want people to come in and say, okay, well, I'm going to eliminate a whole department, but I'll make up the cut somewhere else and say there's no fiscal note. But I think it's pretty minor, and it does balance, so that's fine. I guess I don't really care.
All right, then, Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 805 be recommended to pass and sent to full finance.
All right, on that motion, would anyone else like to be heard on Senate File 805? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Mm-hmm. All right.
can, or if Tom wants to, then he can say that for me, too.
Who wants to chair? Raise your hand. Sorry. Senator Dill has never chaired. Should let Senator Dill. Okay, next time.
He's not jumping up.
Senator Anderson, Senate File 996.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. Senate File 996 is a request for economic recovery funds or stimulus bill funds from the state energy plan. And members, you'll recall we're going to try to hear all the rest of the requests that are coming up for those stimulus funds by next week so that we can put them all in front of us and make some decisions about this. And this is a really exciting program that we want to propose to you. And I should say right off the bat that it's not a St. Paul program, even though it says the funds would go to the St. Paul Port Authority. This is a program that would deliver help to half of the state of Minnesota. In other words, XL service territory, anywhere in XL service territory across the state of Minnesota to commercial and industrial businesses. A revolving loan fund that would be used to help businesses find energy-efficient improvements to their facilities and help to finance those by using a revolving loan fund that would be paid back with savings that would accrue to that company from the energy improvements. And this is one of the things that we hear from the utilities a lot, that this is one of the most cost-effective kinds of energy efficiency improvements for them is commercial industrial, but we also know that a lot of times businesses don't recognize those opportunities, or if they do, they're not able to get the capital to pay for it. And I just want to mention the Rock 10 example. I know I have two people here from the St. Paul Port Authority, and they Pete Klein, to my left, was extremely involved in the whole Rock 10 process, as was I, and this committee provided support for that process and for finding solutions to keep that paper recycling plant in St. Paul moving forward. And one of the things that our state funding did was to identify through some real specific analysis the level of energy savings that could be accomplished at that company. And, you know, it's the oldest paper recycling plant in the United States, in North America, I forget. You can, it's been around for a long time. And it was in jeopardy of closing, and we were in jeopardy of losing those 475 good paying jobs because they ran out of their fuel source. And one of the things that happened as a result of this process was identifying some major energy savings that they could accomplish at that site. And Rock 10, like a lot of companies these days, is part of a corporate kind of giant located in another state, and the other state, you know, the honchos at the corporation were not in favor of investing any money in this plan. And so we had to, the company here had to really prove that it was a good use of money, and once these improvements were made or were identified and will be made, this plant went from being the most inefficient plant in the whole corporate fleet to the most efficient plant, and a very competitive contender in a really competitive marketplace. So this is a way to help businesses become more competitive, to help retain existing jobs, and allow companies to save money so that they can create new jobs by, you know, translating those energy savings hopefully into new jobs and salaries. So I'm in danger of taking away everything that my witnesses wanted to say, so I'll stop now. I've got Lori Lauder from the St. Paul Port Authority and Pete Klein from the Port Authority. Who wants to go first?
I'll give an overview, if I might. Thank you, Senator.
Okay, Ms. Lauder.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Lori Lauder. I'm the Director of Business and Intergovernmental Affairs at the St. Paul Port Authority. You have a handout, and I just wanted to hit a couple of high points about who is the Port Authority and what does it do. It's a 77-year-old economic development agency, and our focus is on business growth and job development in the commercial industrial sectors. And as you can see in your fourth or fifth bullet, there are some of the key areas of economic development that we've been undertaking. Some for decades include brownfields redevelopment and business financing. Certainly, we still manage the St. Paul Harbor in St. Paul, downtown, commercial navigation. We do some workforce development as well. I wanted to focus on a couple of things that I thought would be of particular interest to you as Pete talks about our BTU program, and that is we have several areas of expertise, and one of those is in business underwriting and providing loan transactions with our business customers and then managing the loan portfolio and undertaking loan servicing. So business lending is what we do, and that's certainly what we would be called upon to do in implementing this program. Also, I just wanted to flag a couple of energy conservation things. This is the second bullet inside the examples of production outcomes. For many, many years, we've been involved in energy efficiency work. We undertook the Energy Park Business Center that I think we're all familiar with in the Midway, over 200 acres, brownfield site there. We developed, of course, this new program that we want to talk to you about today. Senator Anderson, I think, was very eloquent about describing Rock 10 and the work we did there. Rock 10, of course, is the state's largest paperboard recycler and so very important, not only for the current jobs of about 475 jobs in number, very well-paying jobs, but for all of the spin-off effects. This company spends at least $75 million per year, Mr. Chair, in ancillary services throughout the state of Minnesota. So it's an incredible economic engine. And lastly, I wanted to point out that one of the things we also do as we have moved along and continue to move along in redeveloping our brownfield sites is we have provided and continue to provide financing for companies that are building energy efficiency facilities that have some terrific energy efficiency components to them, as well as a lot of them now are getting into sustainable building products, and also as far as their processes, they are really becoming efficient in saving energy, and we're finding some of our companies that we financed 2 or 3 years ago are making extraordinary leaps and bounds in that way. So that's the overview of the Port Authority, Mr. Chair. I'd like to turn this over to Pete Klein, who will talk about the details of our proposed program.
Well, maybe before we go to Mr. Klein, members, are there any questions for Ms. Lauder? Senator Hahn?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was just you were talking about the sort of the role of the Port Authority and the expertise that you have and I guess being a service, providing a service to the business community and so forth. The bill that we're looking at is establishing a grant fund, and I'm a little concerned about the fact that it says that the grant monies are to be used for things other than giving grants, other than helping these businesses do these things that would be energy improvement. It talks about the funds can be used to design, develop, and implement a commercial industrial program to fund energy efficiency improvements. In other words, sort of the administrative work, which is what you said you already have expertise and are doing. And why would we need to spend grant money to do the things that you already are doing? And I'm just thinking that maybe we ought to focus this exclusively on using the grant monies to be passed through your agency to the businesses and use them for energy improvement. Would that be a problem if we tried to do that rather than say, I don't know what the costs are to do all these things, the administration, marketing, finance-related due diligence analysis and so forth. And I don't know how much money we're talking about appropriating, but I'm just wondering if this is something that is already in the scope of your expertise, why we would need to have grant money fund that if it's already being done.
Ms. Lauder.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, very good question. A couple of clarifications, if I might. The grant funds would be provided through federal stimulus money, and then we would turn around and loan this money to the businesses. So it would be effectively a revolving loan program. As we do in all of our other lending, with all of our other lending products, We provide loans at a modest interest rate, and so Pete has calculated that it'll be about 4% or so. So within that, we will be able to service these loans. And so my point in the big picture about the Port Authority is that we have the expertise to undertake this kind of effort. And I think certainly the design where we will set up our systems for this program and continue to develop the details with Xcel Energy and then implement those by the underwriting process and so forth, those costs will be covered by the a portion of the interest rate to the businesses. And Pete will get into some more details about how the revolving loan fund actually works. But that's the general concept that we have there, is that there will be some ramp-up to put this program in place.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Klein is the Vice President of Finance at the Port Authority. Maybe he should go through a little more of the technical aspects of how this would work, and that might help to answer these questions as well.
All right, Mr. Klein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's my name is Peter Klein. I'm Vice President of Finance with the St. Paul Port Authority. And I would like to go over the goals and some background and how we see it working and our expected results that we are anticipating from the program. And our goals are to make our businesses more economically competitive by reducing their energy costs, and thereby allowing them to retain and create jobs. So it is a job retention and creation program. We also believe that with this program that energy conservation knowledge will greatly increase and expertise will greatly increase in this state, and that that industry will expand. The engineers and the people implementing these projects will increase the need for employment. Also, another advantage to this program is the reduction of fossil fuels and the pollution and CO2 emissions that would go along with those reductions. And then also to allow utilities to meet their energy reduction goals that are established by you. So to speak of the background, again, this was derived from our knowledge that we received through the ROC 10 process. And with ROC 10, just a few years ago, it was on the line to be cut and shut down, and that would have been a very devastating effect to this state as far as recycling and pollutants that would have been emitted with all that paper going into the landfills and other places. So we definitely wanted to retain ROC 10, and through the process in looking for alternatives to the fossil fuels that they currently use, we found that energy conservation was really something that had an immediate effect and was extremely important to the retention of that company. Through this process, we found that we were able to reduce their energy consumption, their demand, by more than 25%. And ROC 10, prior to the energy conservation projects, consumed approximately what downtown St. Paul consumed, about 2 trillion million BTUs per year. And we've been able to reduce that significantly. And through that process, the facility, Sandra Anderson has indicated, has become a high-performing facility and not nearly as at risk as it had been. But what we found in talking with management there is the controller at the St. Paul facility put in his wish list for capital expenditures, and the controller in the New York facility put in her wish list, and then the corporate structure decided who was going to get funded. And projects with six-month paybacks probably got funded. Projects with one-year paybacks maybe got funded. Much more than one-year paybacks were not getting funded, and particularly in energy conservation. And this was before the economic situation that we're in now. They just had higher priorities machines, new equipment. And so what we see, though, and found at Rock 10, is that projects, energy conservation projects with 1 to 5 year paybacks, definitely projects that should be accomplished, that should be into, have just not been given the funding to go forward. So how we see it working is we would create this revolving loan fund, and it is our intent that all of the stimulus funds and all of the conservation improvement funds from Xcel Energy would go in directly to project costs. That all of those funds would go directly to the program costs and the project. We would create a shared savings agreement with the business. We would lend the money to the business, and then from the energy savings, they would pay back the loan, and also they would see reductions in their costs of operations. And we would leverage conservation investment program funds from Xcel Energy, and those would be utilized to pay for energy audits for about three quarters of the engineering studies, and also to rebate somewhere between 20% and 25% of the cost of the projects that have been implemented.
That's ambiguous, you mean.
The results that we expect, again, are job retention, making our businesses more competitive, job creation, making the energy conservation industry in Minnesota,
have a limit on it.
Growing that, and also making it so that it can export its knowledge to other areas of the country. And then we are going to create several hundred very good paying jobs in this industry. The timing is that we can start implementing these projects as soon as the money is made available. The Xcel has been working with many businesses throughout their service territory. Know that these projects have been teed up, the audits have been done, the engineering studies have been done, and they simply just need the funding to go forward. We have a significant amount of support from a wide variety of entities, the business community, Xcel Energy, and the chambers have supported it. Environmental groups such as Center for Energy and Environment, Fresh Energy, Isaac Walton League, government agencies, Office of Energy Security, and they have testified that for the money invested, this gives the state the biggest bang for their buck as far as energy conservation and job creation. DEED, the City of St. Paul, and also the labor and trades people are very in favor of this. And I do have Grania Matirin here from Xcel Energy to also speak to this.
Well, Mr. Klein, you know, I guess went on lines 1.15 to 1.18, you talk about a number of pieces that really don't go directly to making the kinds of changes that you would like to see. Do you know, you know, kind of what's a ballpark figure in terms of percentage of dollars received that would go for the purposes listed there that starts with administration?
For the administration and the creation of the program and ongoing administration, and what we are talking about there is we are going to need to have baseline engineering analysis of current energy consumption, and then we're going to have, after the energy projects have been implemented, then we're going to have another analysis of the energy consumption to show that this energy savings is actually there, and that's really where the payback to this fund is going to come from. What we're expecting is that would be in the range of 1 or 2% of the outstanding loans, and that if we're charging 4% interest on the loans that it would really be paid for from interest earned, and that all of the funds, the stimulus funds and the conservation improvement funds, would be for direct project costs and not for administration.
Well, thank you, Ms. Klein. I think that's helpful. Senator Hand.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess to that point, I'm a little uncomfortable with that, the language of this. I mean, given what I understand your intent to be, it sounds like what you're the thing it says you shall use grant funds for, and it lists a number of things, but it sounds like what you're going to do primarily is loan money. And so maybe we ought to just say for loans, interest-bearing loans. And perhaps what we should do is if there's a need for some seed money to start this up, although I'm not quite sure if I understand it, if these are things you're already doing in the scope of your work as the Port Authority, maybe that should be a specific dollar amount that you may use, whatever the number is, for startup kinds of costs, with the understanding that those would be reimbursed from the interest that is gained from the loan. So that, I mean, the concern I have is just that if we're going to use the money, we ought to use it for that purpose and not get it tied up in doing lots of administrative things. And the language as it's written is pretty open to that. It is really nothing to say you couldn't use all of the money to do administrative things. Not that you would, but you certainly could.
Mr. Chair.
And so if there's a way to maybe do something in the language that would get at that, I'd be more comfortable with it. But
Ms. Klein.
Go ahead.
Certainly our intent is to keep it in the 1% or 2% of the cost to administer it, but there are going to be significant engineering costs in doing the preliminary analysis. A company, let's go through an example. A company comes in with a proposal for implementing a new lighting system or new steam traps or something. We need to have an engineer really review that and make sure that they agree with that proposal. And the companies actually like that concept also, because they're getting proposals from other vendors and they would like to have this third party review to make sure that what they're being promised by that company is actually, a third party review of that. So that's going to make them much more comfortable going forward with energy conservation projects. And then once it is in, then we're going to need engineers to review that. But absolutely, even with the engineering costs, we think that we can keep it under 2%.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, I think you make a very good point, and I agree with you that we need to be very clear in the language about what the money can be used for and to limit the amount that goes to administrative purposes. I think that's very appropriate. So I don't know if we want to do that now or we could work on that language when we bring it back. But I think
it's probably something we could do as we move along, Madam or Senator Anderson.
Can we hear from Ms. McCarran?
All right. Senator Rummel, can you wait until?
Yes, I was going to offer a suggestion, but if you're going to do it in progress, that's fine.
Okay. Ms. McKernan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Grandy McKernan with Xcel Energy, and I'm here to support Senate File 996. Xcel Energy does have commercial industrial customers pulling back from doing conservation projects that have a 3 to 5 year payback time and pay back through energy savings, and this tool would allow these companies to move forward to improve their cash flow for conservation projects and permanently reduce their energy use. So the way it would work, the Port Authority has agreed to offer this throughout our service area. We would put our customers in contact with the Port Authority, and we would help to validate the energy savings. And as you've heard, this would also leverage our conservation improvement program funds, including engineering design and rebates. So it allows companies to leverage an opportunity they might not otherwise be willing to go for. So we appreciate your support.
Well, Ms. McKernan, you know, it's always been a little bewildering to me, and maybe you don't know either, but, you know, I've wondered why companies pull back from a conservation program that gives them a payback in a shorter length of time than they've, you know, looked at as being the possibility. I mean, you can show them that it's going to give them a greater return on their investment than anything else they're doing, and yet they don't choose to go ahead. I'm just kind of baffled by that.
Well, I think as you heard, Mr. Chair, from Mr. Klein at the Port Authority, and what we hear is that the length of the payback period, the window is too long, and they have a shorter time frame that they're looking at for cash flow and return. And as Senator Anderson said in the Rock 10 case, the decisions aren't being – they're competing with projects all across the country and internationally for capital. And if the payback is 3 to 5 years, it's a disincentive for some companies to move forward on them.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee?
3 to 5 years is pretty short.
Senator Anderson?
Well, Mr. Chair, then what I'd like to do is move that Senate File 996 be recommended for inclusion in the stimulus bill and laid on the table, and I will give my commitment to come up with some new language before this bill comes back in front of the division that will tighten some of the terms in term the usage of the grant dollars, as we've discussed. So we'll have that language next time we see this in any
okay.
in front of that division.
All right. Senator Anderson moves that Senate File 996 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the stimulus bill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Thank you.
The motion is adopted. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Oh, God, no. I was just going to say that.
Senate File 1699 also relates to federal stimulus funding and looks at different renewable energy and efficiency grants. You know, I know that some of the issues that are covered in this bill, Madam Chair and members, pertain to, you know, some things that different departments have already talked about. I guess I like, you know, in Section 1 under Subdivision 1, Number 4, on lines 121 to 23, you know, where it uses some of the funding to coordinate with existing utility conservation programs and other leverage funds, including state investments in biofuels, wind, and solar. I think those would be helpful. I'm not sure that biofuel is mentioned in a lot of the conversation that we've had around here. But then on page 2, there are some of those same kinds of pieces that are mentioned on lines 2.4 to 2.6. Some of them deal with specific technologies that are used particularly in rural areas. And, you know, with me today is Kate Paris. Excuse me, I just about called her by her previous name. But, you know, she is currently working with AURI and would like to make some comments on it as well.
Great. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Paris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm excited to actually be in your committee for the first time. So thank you for letting me be here today. Through our work with AURI, we work with both the Minnesota Renewable Energy Roundtable as well as work with clients in the renewable energy industry. During the last few months, there's been a lot of excitement about the federal stimulus package and what opportunities that might present for the renewable energy industry. The bill before you allows the Office of Energy Security to use some of the federal stimulus funds for renewable energy grant programs. As Senator Kubley mentioned, the types of projects highlighted in the bill are only an example. It's not limited to, but the ones listed state improving energy efficiency of biofuels facilities, projects that displace fossil fuel energy inputs with energy derived from renewable resources, projects that produce biofuels or bioenergy, or projects that install commercial-scale wind or solar. The language reflects the goals and the requirements of the DOE stimulus money to create or retain jobs, as well as create or conserve energy. The language also notes that projects must meet the federal deadlines. So that would mean that you're probably looking at projects that are close to shovel-ready. Additionally, the language notes that the Office of Energy Security should be looking at geographic diversity, which is obviously important for AURI and I know other members of the committee. So the stimulus package has offered some wonderful opportunities for us, both in energy conservation and moving some of those opportunities forward. I know that's been a discussion for many of you. But there's also significant interest for wind, solar, biomass, biofuels, et cetera. And as we learned, as part of the Green Jobs Task Force, there's also an opportunity for jobs within the renewable energy industry. And we're hoping that you'll consider this as part of your package. Thank you.
Very good. Any questions from the committee? Let's see, I'm just looking. Yeah, we haven't heard very much about biofuels so far in the proposals that I've seen for the stimulus dollars. And so I'm glad you're bringing those in front of us because they need to be part of the discussion as well. And, of course, we've spent about $1 billion already ourselves, so we'll have to figure out how to winnow it down. But these are really important pieces of those energy savings, job creation ideas. So I'm very glad to have these in front of the committee. Anything else, Senator Kubley, you wanted to add on this?
Well, you know, I guess one of the reasons I'm pleased to have those in there, Madam Chair, I think we've got some significant strides that can be made, and the new administration at the national level is talking about how to become energy independent. It does seem to me that, having the biofuels piece in there is particularly important when we're getting most of our energy from countries around the globe that have not traditionally been overly friendly toward us. And, it seems to me that it would probably be best if we could have a little more consistency in the dependable nature of its delivery.
So we should have energy independent and friendly fuels.
Well, friendly fuel in a sources. Variety of ways, Madam Chair.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you. All right. Well, Senator Kubley, would you like to move this bill?
Yeah, I would, Madam Chair. I'd move that Senate File 1699 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in our stimulus bill as well from the feds.
Excellent. All right. If there's no further discussion on that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you.
And members,
thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Paris. Thanks for coming to join us. We're going to try to put together a list of all the proposals that we have for stimulus funding out of these energy programs and get that to committee members next week so that we can all look at it and help to put together our bill, hopefully over the next week. So if you have any more ideas, make sure you bring them to the committee by next Tuesday. That's our goal. All right. If there's no other questions, the meeting's adjourned.